This is Neve McIntosh. I'm Madame Vastra from Doctor Who, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I will see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for June 18th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenflug.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, of course, I am celebrating all of the anniversaries of things that came out in 1979. The 40th anniversary of Svengoolie, The Black Hole, The Muppet Movie, all happened this week. I'm an old person.
Moving right along.
Moving
right along. No, that's a great, those are great films. I shouldn't say that. The Black Hole, I don't know if it was a great film.
It was not necessarily a great film, but it was certainly a cultural icon at the time.
Is that what Space Mountain was built upon?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know. We should look into that.
Anyway, there you go.
There you go. 40th anniversary of all sorts of stuff this year. 39th anniversary for the Blues Brothers. So not quite the 40th next year. Next year we're gonna have a celebration.
I miss the train. I couldn't get there. I'm talking about. Was it Jake? No, it
yes.
wasn't. Jake was talking yes. to Princess Leia.
Right. Don't kill me.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You and I both got a chance to see Shaft.
Shut your mouth.
But I'm talking about Shaft.
We're gonna walk.
What are you doing? I'm doing the walkages.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, all right. So we have Samuel Jackson yes. playing the 70s version of Shaft.
Uh-huh. For the second time.
For the second time.
Yeah, he did it in 2000. Is this
a follow-up?
This is a follow-up to the Samuel L. Jackson 2000 Shaft.
Oh, that's awful. All right, so I'll just go ahead and say 40 out of 100.
Okay.
This is a 80s movie
uh-huh.
based on a 70s property.
Uh-huh.
That the 70s, I really wish they would have gone Tarantino on this.
Uh-huh.
Because being sweaty, being the 70s, having the cool music would have made this so much better. Instead, we got this MacGyver-ish 80s movie with this effeminate modern male that was supposed to be his junior.
Yeah.
That somehow got through MIT and through FBI training to wear super tight plaid shirts. And it was awful.
I loved this movie. I loved every minute of this movie. I ate up all of the 70s-ishness, all of the 80s-ishness, all of the out-of-time, the man-out-of-time parts of this. I ate this up. I thought the music was very reminiscent of that original music without being that original music.
I just totally disagree.
Yeah,
there's a sound of that era.
Yeah.
And it's certainly, I don't think they, and I'm sorry, they weren't, that was the thrill of challenge is that the tone was wrong. It was like modern music with an 80s movie about a 70s property.
Yeah.
That it just, there's nothing that was consistent enough that made, this was kind of like what I felt about Godzilla and about Dark Phoenix. There was something just off about how the presentation was. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I loved it. I was giggling from the beginning to end. This is a funny movie with funny things that are happening with these juxtapositions between these three time periods. And I laughed out loud through this entire movie.
But I don't think they meant to bait those time things. This is an 80s sound. I mean, there was a part where they're going into a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Heart to Heart or Magnum P.I. or
yes.
It was just awful. And you know, once again, this is a 70s product where he's driving a 1970s car.
Uh-huh.
But it takes place in 2019. I mean, it's just like, at some point, become a little more consistent with what your tone is. Then kind of make the story. It's like a 70s story
yeah
told through a 1980s filter to bring it to
modern day.
Oh, this is awful.
I loved every minute of it, and I need to get a new trench coat. That was the big takeaway for me, because I love the costumes in this movie.
Yuck. This is awful.
I loved every minute of it. You are so wrong, sir. You should go and see Shaft for yourself and see if one of us is right and one of us is wrong, but I'll guarantee that it is one of us.
All right.
So there you go. You got a chance to wrap up American Gods Season 2 on Starz.
Yeah, American Gods. All right, so they went through a huge budget change between the first season, which was incredibly good, and the second season. And I think it took about half of that second season to get their tone right and get the story right. The first shows, they certainly were not my favorite. This is based on Neil Gaiman's American Gods novel. We've reviewed the book.
Yeah.
We reviewed the comic that by P. Craig Russell and Scott Hampton, and we've reviewed the first season. So this is the second season. The second half of the second season, it's kind of picks up, and I start getting into it.
Okay,
so it's very interesting. Neil Gaiman's had two really good properties.
Mm-hmm.
Good Omens, which we reviewed last week, and American Gods. If you like American Gods, I think you'll enjoy at least the second half of the second season.
Right.
But I don't know if it's going to go any further than this. I really think that they needed the budget. The tone change. I'm using tone a lot this week, but the first season, everybody's kind of sweaty. It's kind of oily. It's very, there's something that's very mysterious about the presentation, the filters they're using. To do it. The second season is much more like a television show.
Okay.
And no one is as slimy and sweaty or anything like that. It's just there's a jarring change to it. They've got a wonderful cast. They've worked well with the number of actors who ended up leaving after the first season. But I think that I'm glad I got through it, but yeah, unless you're a lover of this material, this is probably it for it.
Okay. You also got a chance to see Monty Don's French Gardens. This is on Netflix now.
Somehow I just picked this up.
Yeah.
And this is a 3-episode series. In fact, I enjoyed it so much. This is French Gardens that I started the Italian Gardens one last night.
The series that he did before. The French Gardens.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't
know. That's from 2011.
Well, I don't know the order of them, Steve.
it doesn't really matter.
I just go right from what Netflix gave me.
Mm-hmm.
This is the 3 episodes. The first episode is talking a little bit about the big gardens, Versailles being one of them. And you go through the idea of how they design them, the resources they use to do it. You're just amazed that at some point, the French people said, or somebody said, we are going to tame nature. We move from there to the second episode. The second episode talks a little bit about food production.
Okay.
About having a garden that produces food. And there are some wonderful gardens, even one that produces a lot of food that's just there for looks. They end up composting almost all the food from it.
Hmm.
But it was very interesting. And in the third of this series actually is about artists who are putting together their gardens in France, and there's just different takes of it. Some of them are modern. In fact, there's one that, I mean, that is, certainly is a modern garden, as in maybe influenced maybe by Cubist movement and things of that nature. And then there's some ones that use natural plants from the area, and just a bunch of stuff. You cannot help but leave this going, I must do something to my surroundings, because It truly is inspiring, and the aesthetics that it creates is just amazing.
Yep.
I think that the taming of water and also using plants to kind of create an elegant area for you, you cannot help but just go, wow,
mm-hmm.
I should be able to do that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been working on the garden here at the house for a couple of weeks now, and just, you know, doing those aesthetic things and changing your environment changes the way you feel. And
sure.
That's very interesting that you got glommed into this in this story.
Well, I'll tell you right now, the Italian one is equally as fascinating.
Yeah.
And once again, in fact, all of the gardens, in fact, I'll just go ahead and just give you the from the first episode of the Italian one. All the gardens, as we think of gardens today, they probably came from this one Italian guy.
Interesting.
This Roman guy. And anyway, he created statues around a pool and you would show up and you would eat and all this other stuff. And from there, anything you can think of as a garden somehow has its origin there. And I say all that stuff, but I certainly am lying because I said that, think of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So think of Babylon, and if you go back, I'm sure India and China have their versions of it. But maybe as we look at them in the West, maybe as we look at taming the outside, maybe it comes from this Roman person. Anyway, fascinating, good stuff.
I happened to hear an NPR piece about the first gardens in California, and this one garden that has become the model for all of the other gardens, and sure. It had the first kidney-shaped pool, and
really?
Kidney-shaped pools then became all the rage in California after this one model garden. So there's some influence there. When you have something special, sure. Everybody else emulates it, and that's very interesting.
And it just, weekends are made for this, Steve,
that's
right?
That's it. That's right. I got a chance to see Booksmart, the movie
Yay!
That you saw weeks ago, and I finally got a chance to see this one. This is a wonderful, independent sort of film. I'm still shocked that this has been open to the theaters at all, because it really has not done well in the box office. But I really suggest that everybody go see Booksmart. This is the story of two young ladies who are graduating from high school, and they realize that they've worked far too much in high school, and they need that one night to experience all of the other side of life before they go on to college.
Well, let's preface this by saying, if you are willing to, maybe a little potty humor and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. This is
certainly a one of those junky comedies that we all kind of laugh and snicker at because they just hit it so right.
Uh-huh. But this is a coming-of-age story. This is that maybe not too much of a junk comedy. This is some deep conversation about life and learning about yourself and finding yourself through this adventure of this night.
Did you find the karaoke scene as joyful as I did?
Not quite as joyful as you did.
As he's like gargling the microphone.
Every scene in this is wonderful. These characters are all such stereotypes, such perfect little packages of this type of person that you meet in high school and that type of person that you meet in high school, and they all come together and they work together so well in this.
And Billy Lord just showing up everywhere and anywhere.
That's right. She's everywhere.
She just pops up.
Yeah. This is wonderful. Yes, this is not a movie for kids. This is definitely a movie for the 17-year-olds and the 18-year-olds who experience these stereotypes in high school and are looking forward to their college life, and for us old people looking back at what our college life might have been.
The love of stuffed animals just comes out.
She loves her stuffed animals, that's for sure. This is a little bit raunchy. This is a little
yes.
bit silly. This is a little bit everything, but it comes together really well. I really suggest that you go see Booksmart. On TV, I've been watching The Summer of Fun on ABC.
Barcelona.
Yeah, this when I was visiting Barcelona. There's so many funny parts of Booksmart.
Sorry.
On TV, I've been watching The Summer of Fun on ABC. Card Sharks is back with host Joel McHale. This is a fun game show with a fun host.
This is the show with the red and blue cards, and they flip them over.
Yep, and you have to get to the end of your row of cards guessing higher or lower.
Okay.
Uh-huh. This so much fun watching this. It's on again on Thursday. You should really catch that.
Is this like a month's worth of shows? Or how?
All summer. They do it all summer.
Oh, so, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, The Summer of Fun is what they call it. The Press Your Luck that I was so excited to watch last week,
yes.
I was really, really disappointed in Press Your Luck. I did not enjoy this show at all. Elizabeth Banks, who is one of my favorites in acting, she's not a game show host. She just didn't show me reality in this reality show. She was just reading her lines because she's an actress, not a host.
And we were talking about that as we were preparing for the show. Wink Martindale, mm-hmm. Pat Sajak,
Alex Trebek,
Bob Eubanks.
Mm-hmm.
There was something, they had this ability to playfully talk to the contestants,
uh-huh.
playfully address the audience.
Think of Bob Barker.
Oh, yes.
Bob Barker is a perfect example of that host, that guy that you cared about his ideas, and he was expressing his care for the contestants and in part for the audience.
And for the ladies backstage, it seems like. And of course, he beat up Adam Sandler, so you know, we've got to like that about
Bob Barker is a perfect example of a great game show host. Elizabeth Banks, she left me cold. I didn't feel like she cared about the contestants. I didn't feel like she cared about the audience. She was just reading her lines off of the cards. Joel McHale on Card Sharks, excellent. Wonderful.
Maybe it'll loosen up a little bit as the summer goes by. You know, everything has a beginning, Steve.
That's right. And most of my week was taken up watching Doctor Who, because Doctor Who is now on Pluto TV 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can flip on the Doctor Who channel. Finally, this is the planet I've been waiting for 45 years. There's a Doctor Who channel, finally.
Well, there you go, Steve.
Uh-huh.
And maybe you can put it outside and you can get some sun.
I've put the projector outside under my canopy in the dark after the sun goes down.
And the bugs go away, Steve?
Then the bugs come out and I go back inside and watch it inside. Yes, Doctor Who is on TV. No, you should probably not watch it while camping. That's not a thing. Stacy got a chance to see Ma, and here is her review.
Hi guys, this week I watched Ma, which is the latest horror offering from Blumhouse. Octavia Spencer stars as the titular Ma, who opens up her home to a group of teenagers with just one simple, basic rule. Don't go upstairs. You can imagine what happens from there on. What unfolds is a weaving story of flashbacks, anger, and honestly well-placed vengeance that at times feels like kind of a homage to Stephen King, with shades of Carrie and Misery throughout. You'll notice when you see it. It's not perfect, but it's damn good, and it's so much fun. You will end up laughing at things that you probably shouldn't. I'm really glad personally to see a return to well-written stories and interesting fleshed-out characters. A film that doesn't rely on jump scares or monsters under the bed in order to frighten you. This does it really, really well. I know the reviews haven't been great, but actually you should give it a chance. It's better than you're thinking. If you liked Greta, which came out earlier this year, you'll really love Ma. So, if you want to follow me, my thoughts on films, and my occasional reviews and ramblings, you can on Twitter. It's @filmswithstacy.
Opening this week, there's some scary toys out there this week, huh?
There are some scary toys, Steve. Those dummies in Toy Story 4 look scary.
There's a dummy. Oh, boy.
A bunch of them.
Is there? Oh, boy.
And also a fork, Steve. It's a modern food instrument, the spork.
It's a spork, right?
It is a spork.
Toy Story 4 is opening this week. I look forward to that one because there's a movie called Toy Story 3.
Exactly.
That's why I look forward to Toy Story 4. Because if you remember, when we were talking about the idea of a third Toy Story movie, we dismissed it out of hand going, it's the third one. It's not going to be nearly as good as the first two. Well, Toy Story 3 was pretty amazing.
Well, we got kind of misty, the ode to the saying goodbye to your toys and childhood, Steve.
Yep.
And so I don't know what Toy Story 4 is. Obviously, Pixar's done some really good work. Mm-hmm. And it's got Keanu Reeves, Steve.
He is like the savior of movies right now, isn't he?
Well, he's the Neo. I mean, sometimes you take the blue pill, sometimes you take the red pill.
He's just everywhere. Like, every news story lately has had Keanu Reeves.
Mr. Anderson.
There's so many Keanu Reeves stories in the last couple of weeks, not just from John Wick, just Keanu Reeves is doing these things across the country, including at E3, where he took the stage and
no, you're breathtaking.
It was complimenting the audience in a shouting language. This is wonderful. He seems to be like the star of the movies right now.
Well, you know, it was born on President's Day.
Yes, the new Bill and Ted movie is still in production. They are still working on a Bill and Ted 3, and I have high expectations for it. Keanu Reeves is everywhere, including in Toy Story 4. The other big star who we really like to watch and is really caring about his audience is Mark Hamill.
Luke Skywalker himself. Are there droids in this?
I don't know. That's a great question. We'll have to find out when we see the new Child's Play, the new Chucky movie featuring Mark Hamill as the voice of Chucky.
Well, he is there in a certain kind of way, Steve.
He's your plastic pal who's fun to be with. Yeah, I look forward to this one. I don't hate the Chucky franchise. I don't love it either. They went in a very, very silly direction with the Chucky franchise in the last few years. This one seems to be a pretty scary idea where in 2019 everything is connected and the new Chucky doll might not actually be a soul that's inhabiting a doll. It might actually be technology that's out to kill you.
Well, there you go. And once again, Luke Skywalker is back.
You're not going to watch this one, are you?
Absolutely not.
Let's let's move on. There's a movie called Anna, or Anna, I don't know which one, because this is the story of a Russian lady who is a secret spy who can really mess up your day.
Is this this is called Lucy, right?
Yeah, this is the sequel to Lucy, without Lucy being a part of it at all. This is from the same people who made Lucy, the girl who's undercover and can really kick your butt. The trailer's great.
It is. Yeah. This time they get it right. Is that what it is?
I thought Lucy was fine. There was nothing wrong with Lucy.
Oh, I'm teasing.
There is a movie called Wild Rose. This is the story of a young lady from Glasgow, Scotland, who has dreams of becoming Nashville star. She wants to be a country singer, and she's got all sorts of troubles, and maybe music can solve them.
Well, it's either Scottish or it's crap, Steve. Mike Myers comes out when we need him to.
Is he in every music movie? Is that what it is?
It could be.
Bohemian Rhapsody and this one?
It could be. You know, Wild Rose looks pretty good.
It looks good. I think that one will be fun. There is a season 2 of the series Dark coming to Netflix.
It is. It's describing my soul, right, Steve?
There are Germans in it. This is a supernatural saga in a German town where there's all sorts of really weird things happening in this town.
Well, there you go. This looks pretty good. It's on Netflix.
And on HBO, there's a new movie called Euphoria. This is the story of a group of high school students grappling with the issues of the day, semi-similar to Booksmart, but this is really the dark, seedy side of growing up in America.
Back in 1995, there was a movie that came out called Kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you saw that, but the ending was a young man who was a teenager who had AIDS, basically, they rape like another child?
An unconscious girl who happened to be Rosario Dawson, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was her debut, was in the movie Kids.
Not to give away that movie, but the entire movie was young people making questionable decisions, basically just kind of following them around.
Yeah.
Now, Euphoria seems to be that same shocking type of... Well, I don't know what it is going to be, but it certainly is going to get a lot of press this week.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be a good type of press. I don't know if I have interest in watching this. First of all, they're young people and making lots of decisions.
And speaking as the father of two girls in high school, you don't want them to make bad decisions. You want them to be making good choices. And movies like this seem exploitative.
Well, it says filled with graphic nudity, violence, and drug use.
Yeah.
Well, so I don't know. It's going to find an audience. Certainly, it's going to be controversial. Maybe it's good. We'll find out.
We'll see. Continuing my saga of summer fun on ABC, the premiere of Holy Moly is on Thursday this week.
Well, Steve, I grew up where the founding of Putt-Putt Golf Courses is.
Yeah.
Down in North Carolina.
All right.
And so we always had the latest of Putt-Putt Golf Courses, but this seems to be taking Putt-Putt on a whole new level.
The extreme mini golf is what we're going on here. This is filmed on the same grounds that the TV show Wipeout was filmed. A bunch of people doing all sorts of athletic weird things to get to their goal, and this is all surrounding mini golf. So there's all the mini golf parts to it here too.
But usually mini golf involves just putting.
Uh-huh.
This looks like there's chipping involved too. Did I use chip?
There is that you?
That's me. Chipping. So there seems to be another element that's put for this. And maybe this will spur some creativity in creating some new types of mini golf.
Interesting.
But we'll see.
I look forward to this one. I loved Wipeout. I can still have joy watching Wipeout.
Who are our hosts, Steve?
This is Rob Riggle and Joe Tessitore. And I look forward to the two of them.
And he just got back from the Catalina Wine Festival, right?
Rob Riggle is on all of those silly comedies that you love, and this is going to be that silly comedy that you love in TV show form, where he's playing that host.
Okay.
And I think he's going to do a great job with this one. Book it. Brings us to our book it. Our book of the week, you have been reading American Nations, A History of the 11 Rival Regional Cultures of North America. This is by Colin Woodard.
This was back in 2011 when this book was written. And I've read a bunch of articles quoting this. I seem to use this quite a bit. I said at some point I should read this book, and I finally got a chance where I got through it.
Okay, so tell us all about this idea of the 11 regions of North America.
Well, it describes, if you've ever, we're in Chicago area.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever said, well, what are those people down in Alabama? Why would they do things this way? And you're saying, oh, well, maybe there's a reason for that. And this book looks to expose what the difference is in the regions, where they were founded, and how they were founded actually still permeates today.
Mm-hmm.
On how they address issues. In fact, one of the most fascinating parts of this book is where they use the state of Ohio as our example of this. So we have 11 rival nations, and one of them is Yankeedom, interestingly enough.
Okay.
Obviously, that would be the Northeast.
Sure.
But that it's not just the United States. One of the things that you have to think of is the United States, Canada, and Mexico. All the Americas that we would describe, North America, they get thrown into this. So one of the questions that was asked is, why didn't the Canadian Yankeedom provinces join the American Revolution? And we're usually taught something to the effect of, well, that's where people who were loyal to England, they kind of escaped to. Well, that wasn't actually... That's a very weak argument, and he addresses that in there. The people of Nova Scotia are very similar to the people of Maine, very similar to the people of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was religious-based, how they were, and a lot of the thrust of that was religious-based. And even though it may not be based on a religion today, the feelings of that group still permeates, even as people move into that area from who have a different religions. So it still kind of permeates. Yankeedom actually would be, Chicago would be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The Pacific West would be part of that. This is a way of looking at society, and you could compare and contrast that to the Deep South, which it sounds like the genesis of that area was Charleston, South Carolina. And whether you're in South Carolina or in Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi, usually the way they viewed society, they viewed at the time that there was a group of, say, quote-unquote, enlightened group, and they were to look after the other group. And it followed in the tradition of Greece and Rome, and whether you agree with that or not, and whether the people there agree with that or not, it's still kind of how you know, there's sort of a paternal way of how rules get kind of placed out there. And while certainly our conversation is certainly not going to defend his arguments real strongly, I can say that this is a very well thought out book. I certainly didn't leave this thinking, oh, he missed something. He may have missed something. He may not have all the answers, but it has a way of looking at things. And you can see how that is different from the Appalachian area that they throw out there. And that's the other region that we kind of mistake for the Deep South and how they look at things. And that could be from Western Pennsylvania, the southern part of Ohio. Here in Illinois, the southern part of Illinois is mm-hmm. part of the Appalachian area. And that could be Arkansas. It could be part of Texas. This is a region, and that, you know, one of the things that works real hard with this is a lot of Scott-Irish, I'm independent, get off my lawn and don't tread on me. And this is certainly that part of the world, and it is a very distinctive way of addressing government, how you relate to your neighbors and a number of other things. And one of the things they talked about was, if you moved into my neighborhood, I may feel we're too close together. I may have to move further west.
Wow.
So that gets played part of it. And let me just go through a couple of them. One of them was Il Norte. That would be the southern part, maybe it's from San Antonio, the southern part of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, southern part of California, and the northern part of Mexico. And they share a distinctive cultural identity with each other. It's very different from the rest of Mexico. So once again, you're like, oh, really? This, and I can't help but read this. And you know, just you, all of a sudden you start getting the groove of how different parts of our population address things.
And then the main thrust then is, how can we work together? How do we form sure. coalitions to become leaders of the entire country? Because that seems like there's some real divisions in the cultures here.
And in fact, that is part of trying to create the coalition. If you ever wonder why a politician may come across as schizophrenic, you know, they're down in the Deep South talking one way, and they're trying to address the people in New England as different people. And New Amsterdam or New York, the Dutch way, which is basically as liberal as it can be. And when I say liberal, I mean anything goes. I don't mean that Democratic or Republican. I mean pretty much your life is your life. And it is potentially the most powerful city in the world, where the intellectual hub of the world could be there too. So it's the money engine of the world. Trying to create coalitions among those areas means that you are kind of addressing things in different ways. The person who is in the far west, who pretty much is, they basically talked about it being very libertarian in the sense that, you know, you can, if it's your land, you can move water where you need to move water. You can, anything goes. So think of Colorado being the forefront of a lot of some of the
legalization issues.
There you go.
Ah, that.
So
we should open our huge Papa John's franchise in Colorado.
Oh, possibly. Gotcha. But if you think of how Colorado was a forefront of that, and how maybe the Deep South or the Appalachian area addresses the similar issues, they may not be as open to that. But maybe the Pacific Northwest, which is part of Yankeedom, maybe, or maybe not. Maybe they don't feel that.
I think of when you say the Pacific Northwest is Twin Peaks, and the amount of drugs in Twin Peaks is unbelievable. So they're open to that.
Absolutely. But you have to think about how to get things through. You know, when one group says, maybe from the Northeast, that you should abstain from drinking alcohol and forces prohibition on the rest of the United States, you know, is that parental? Is that a reasonable thing to do? And then how do you unwind that? You know, I don't know. How do you unwind that? I grew up in the eastern part of North Carolina in Virginia. That is Tidewater. You know, if remember from Hamilton, we learned that the capital of the United States was a backdoor deal between Hamilton and some of the Virginians. And we got the nation's capital there. Well, the nation's capital meant the three of the first four presidents were from Tidewater. Well, Tidewater is a very small area. It's a kind of a, when I say dying area, population-wise, everyone else is growing on a much faster level than the Tidewater, Virginia area. And so the power they had at that time is not as strong as this. They tend to get either thrown in with the Deep South or the Appalachian area, or maybe they will make an agreement sort of with the Northeast. It just depends. And kind of knowing where the pulse is of that time and where the coalitions are coming in, maybe on how you market products, maybe on how you address certain areas. You know, there are times where you come in and you're like, that's the way it is. You're Sam the Eagle, right? Okay. And there are times when you're like the Mayhem Band, which is, you know, certainly much more free-flowing.
I now understand this book because you put it into Muppet terms for me. Thank you very much.
I found this book fascinating. If you have you want to understand America, And that means Canada, mm-hmm. United States, and Mexico a lot better. You'll come through, out of this really having an appreciation for our cultural differences and how we all work together.
And how we can work together. The cultural part of it is much more interesting to me. And knowing that there's some reason for these regions, there's some history, even if you don't know the history, you know about today, and today was based on yesterday. And there's a reason why these regions are different cultures.
And you say, well, we'll just take a whole group of people from the Northeast and we'll move them down to, say, Texas, and they'll change things. That's not true.
No.
What his studies have shown is you tend to adopt the cultural norms, mm-hmm. even if you don't truly adopt them. But if you're a person from Vermont and you're in the middle of Texas, you may never really feel at home because
right.
you may have just a different way of looking at how we all should be working together or how we should be independent from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a number of our conversations over the years may come from the exploration of, you grew up in Chicago area.
Yankeedom.
That's my favorite. So it just sounds just awful. And I grew up in the Tidewater area.
Uh-huh.
And I say Tidewater, maybe I have some deep South, or maybe I have some Appalachian area and on how we address things. But
mm-hmm.
you kind of fall into like, well, you should be independent and you should do it this only way. And you may say something like, well, if we all work together, we can get this thing done together.
Right.
And it's just, like I said, it's just a different way of addressing similar things. And instead of condemning other regions for doing things differently,
mm-hmm.
This is part of understanding why a culture may address things a little bit different. It could be who founded this area, how they address things. And I think that you'll come from the just come to with a real appreciation of that.
I love it. I endorse the idea of finding this book on our Amazon store and reading it. It's called American Nations, A History of the 11 Rival Regional Cultures of North America by Colin Woodard. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
You know, we've got our 5th anniversary coming up in July, Chip.
What? July 6th, Dave.
July 6th at the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin. You should come down and join us.
There'll probably be fireworks still going on somewhere.
Every night for the week after July 4th, all the people that went into Indiana to get fireworks, they'll be blowing those off all night.
The local dogs just love it. They love it. They say, can we have it more? Can it go
goodness.
All year round?
But you can come out without any fireworks to Elgin and celebrate with us our 5th anniversary spectacular. And before you get there, you need to pick up a copy of The Man Called Uwe. This is a novel that was written in 2014, and it is our group read for the summertime.
Frederick Bachman. I ended up actually watching the Swedish movie.
Yeah.
And while I didn't review it today, because I didn't want to give away everything concerning it, I will say that he is a curmudgeon, kind of a grumpy man.
Okay.
And I think that many people will start off not really liking this guy, but maybe there's something there. Maybe there's something there. The movie captures the book real well. The book goes into a little more detail. I think that there's a reason why some of the people who have been listening to our show have requested that we review this and read this. And
yes, this is one of the books that was requested of us that we should really review this. This is one of those books that has been on my list for a long time. Now it's on your list too. You need to get a copy of this book and read it along with us so we can have our discussion on July 6th.
So this is our group read.
Yep.
And to all of our listeners, we do listen. We just listen slowly. We're men.
Are we not men? We are Devo. Sorry. Yes, go get that book and let's read it together. Let's get together on July 6th and discuss it. But before that, the weekend before that, we are going to go up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin to the Wisconsin Comic Con. And you should join us there too.
Milwaukee, Steve.
That's right. That's the ancients called it.
That's right. Here, we learned that from Alice Cooper when we were hanging out with Wayne and Garth, Steve.
Yes. I look forward to our trip to Milwaukee, and it's not just because of the beer region part of the trip, but yes, that is part of it.
Old Milwaukee, uh-huh. Firebrew, Stroh's, I'm ready. Schlitz. Steve, all the great beers, right?
I think so. I think that all the really crummy beers.
All the discount beers.
All the discount beers come from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
They weren't originally discount beers, but they are now.
Oh, they are now. Yeah, that's for sure. Wisconsin Comic Con is going to be a great time. Nichelle Nichols is going to be there. Sean Astin, Ray Park, Adam Baldwin, and Creed Bratton are all going to be there, and I hope to get a little bit of time with each of them to just give them our joy. That's what these conventions are for, I think.
Are both halves of Darth Maul going to be there?
I think so. Yes, I think Ray Park is complete, and he'll be there.
They've sent him back together.
He's such a big, muscular stunt guy. Like, he could break you.
Well, Rudy's going to be there, too.
Yeah, he's not so big or muscular or stunty. No? Yeah.
Mr. Frodo?
Yeah.
Mr. Samwise?
Jeez. Yeah, I look forward to seeing all these guys come out with us. We're gonna have so much fun. That's all there is to it. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think so. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. You can put stuff on our list, and we'll hear you 2 years later. Exactly. That's how that works. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on the Apple Podcast app and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.
Bye-bye.